This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
It has now been approximately 3 days since Yeshua HaMashiach, that is Jesus, was born, crucified, and resurrected. Since a day with the Lord is as 1,000 years, we're now entering the third day. People, both Jew and Gentile, be ready against the third day, the day of the Lord, the day of his coming. In fact, the prophet Hosea told us about this, to be ready against the third day. And here we are, the third day. But what does it mean? What does it mean, the third day, to be ready for his coming? It means that the culmination of all things is at hand. And so today, we want to talk about an aspect of that that may grip your mind, may grip your heart, may grip your soul, but it needs to be said. You see, the sensitive Western mind is almost incapable of grasping the gravity of tyranny, that is, the treachery that gives birth to it, and the trials and tribulations that will tarnish all genuine human sensibility. Hundreds of years of emerging democratic republics have so sanitized the memory of most people, at least in the Western world, and certainly in America, as to render us desensitized to the realities of the horrors of history and their essential characteristics. Yet, those tyrannical powers have brought untold millions either to their knees in worship or to their torture and tragically painful deaths. So we're going to look over the shoulder of history here today on Viewpoint. It's going to require maybe some wincing bravery for many to have their eyes open to shocking historical realities. But if we would be honest in our preparation for prophetically promised times of ever-increasing and pressurized trials, then it seems we owe it to both ourselves, our loved ones, and our ministry constituencies to take a brief but sobering look back over the shoulder of history. It's going to require more than just a hasty, furtive glance. We're going to have to deal with it directly. So today on Viewpoint, we take a look at absolute tyranny, and I'm glad that you've joined us. It's conversation with ever-increasing conviction, talk that transforms, and today is no exception. By the way, want to express great appreciation for those of you who are continuing to respond to the Persecution Project. And it's so rewarding, so encouraging, and we're continuing to get endorsements coming in for the book from leaders across the country, and it is so encouraging. People are realizing that indeed these times are different than all other times. This is the age of the culmination of all things. It's the third day. The third day. And so, if you were to think about it, just to get a general idea of where that would be, we know from history that Jesus was crucified somewhere around 30 A.D. Not 33 A.D., but around 30 A.D. So that being the case, if you were to add 2,000 years to that, where would that put you? Well, it would necessarily put you at 2030, wouldn't it? 2030 A.D. Well, there are a whole lot of things that are supposed to be happening in 2030 A.D., right? The Great Reset, the implementation of a one-world global order, all of these things supposed to be taking place in 2030 A.D., which makes it seem like there's something significant about this unique moment between right now, 2024 A.D., and 2030 A.D., about 6 years. Somewhere around 6 years, and 2030 A.D. will be here. In other words, the third day. The third day begins. A day with the Lord is 1,000 years, 1,000 years is a day. And without trying to get overly specific about it, we're looking at the general overlay of time. And time is marching on. Everybody knows time is marching on, and the older you get, the faster you know that time is marching on, right? So we need to somehow take the time to take a look at what happened in time so that we can understand the nature of the tyranny, the treachery, the tribulation, and so on that has occurred in history, because, you see, we don't learn from history. And those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And so we don't want to be doomed to repeat it. And you and I want to know what is going to happen. What is going to happen? Why is it going to happen? How is it going to happen? And what do we do about it? In other words, we have to be prepared. So today on Viewpoint, we're preparing for something that we would rather not have to prepare for, but we need to prepare for. And it has to do with persecution. It has to do with rulership in the world. It has to do with the nature of that rulership, how it comes about. And we're going to see during the program here today, we're going to take a look all over the world at how tyranny develops, what it looks like, and the characteristics of many of those who were some of the world's worst tyrants. And you're going to be shocked. You're going to be shocked at what many of them were really like and what motivated them to carry on their agendas. In fact, we're going to find out that there are 10 things that can identify what these previous tyrants, their backgrounds, their manner of rule, their philosophy of life, their government, their view of mankind, and their view of God. So we're going to take a look at the top 10, and you're going to want to stay tuned. Again, Viewpoint does determine destiny, and our viewpoint concerning these issues does determine destiny and will. Now, the first tyrant of all, the greatest tyrant of all, is Satan himself. He is the deceiver of deceivers. He is the Pontifex Maximus of history, the ultimate Pontifex Maximus, wants to be worshipped, wants to be praised. He is the merger of government and power and pride and tyranny governing the world. But he does it so ever so subtly, doesn't he? Sometimes by asking questions. Hath God said, for instance, and he got Adam and Eve to conform to his word, his will, and his ways, and to cast over, to turn over their sovereignty as human beings under God, to turn it over to Satan himself. Now, we don't want to be like that. We don't want to do that. But the interesting thing is, we're prone to do it. We just are prone to do it because we're human beings. And God wants us to follow his word, his will, and his ways. He wants us to have our ears attuned to him, our eyes attuned to him, our hopes, our direction, our trust. He wants everything attuned to him and him alone. So Satan said, I will ascend to heaven. I'm going to exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will be like the Most High. Really, what happens when human beings try to be like the Most High? That's what the Antichrist will be like. The consummate manifestation of Satan himself. We'll be right back.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination.
So what happened in just one generation?
Hi, I'm Chuck Chrismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Absolute tyranny. We're going to talk about that here today on Viewpoint as we continue to take a look over the course of history to identify some of these infamous characters that in their time, well, they were seen to be great people. Some of them were seen to be great people, given great honor today. But my goodness, I'll tell you, they ruled with an iron fist, and the tyranny was terrifying. Satan's tyranny is terrifying, friends. We just don't realize it because he comes in subtly oftentimes. He tests us. He tempts us, just as he did Adam and Eve in the garden, asking the question, hath God said? But he had intended, he had declared, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. In other words, Satan said, I'm going to rule this world. Now, if God rules the world in righteousness and in holiness and in justice, then how do you think Satan will rule the world? And if righteousness alone exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people, just think what will happen when someone Satan invests himself in will rule the world. Well, there have been those characters throughout history that Satan has invested himself in various ways, and they did rule the world in their time. We're going to take a look at what happened with them, to them, through them. But there are two that are selected in the scriptures that help us to get at least a window of vision into how they operate and why. One of them is referred to in the book of Ezekiel, chapter 28, called Tyrus. Tyrus, a type of Satan. And here's what the prophet Ezekiel says concerning him. Because your heart is lifted up, and you have said, I am a god, I sit in the seat of God, they're going to bring you down to the pit. So here's the picture. A type of Satan, heart lifted up, saying, I'm a god, I sit in the seat of God, I'm going to be like God, and therefore I believe that I have the power of God, and I'm going to do what I will. Another is Pharaoh, right there in the Old Testament, a type for Satan. The scripture says in Ezekiel chapter 31, whom are you like in your greatness? Because you have lifted up yourself, and his heart is lifted up, I made the nations to shake at the sound of his fall, when I cast him down to hell with them that descend into the pit. Well, in the book of Exodus chapter 5, we find this. And Pharaoh said, who is the Lord that I should obey his voice? I want you to think about that question. Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice? That's the question that echoes down over all of the tyrants of history. Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice? I mean, don't you know who I am? Don't you know that I'm Alexander the Great? Or don't you know that I'm Caesar Augustus? Or don't you know that I'm Genghis Khan or whatever? Don't you know? Yes, we know, and it's revealed in how you acted, your attitude, and your terrifying tyranny. Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice? Now, interestingly, think about this. Be very careful now. Think about this as you're sitting in your zone of comfort listening to the program today. Is it not true that human beings, even professing Christians, are prone to ask the same question? Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice? In other words, there's something in every single one of us that is tempted and tested to try to be like God, to try to be God, to be like an alternative God. In other words, to be a kind of, shall we say, Antichrist. In other words, against Christ, because we're saying, who is the Lord that I should obey his voice? So the whole issue of obedience then becomes one of the foundational issues concerning tyranny in our world and will be the number one issue concerning the Antichrist when he comes. And the Apostle John said, there have been many Antichrists. There are already many Antichrists. What's he talking about? He's talking about the spirit of Antichrist, which is against God, against his authority, and substituting their own authority for God's authority. And we do that, maybe we don't think that we're acting tyrannically when we do, then in reality, we are acting tyrannically from God's viewpoint when we say yes, but to what God says. God says, thou shalt not, and we say yes, but. God says, remember the Sabbath to keep it holy, and we say yes, but. God says, thou shalt not covet. We say, yes, but. The grass is greener or whatever. Jesus says, they shall. If you divorce your spouse, you're committing adultery. And those who marry those who also divorce commit adultery. We say, yes, but. You see how this works? We actually exalt ourselves in a position making us equal with God. Hath God said, and who is the Lord that I should obey his voice? Now think about that now as we go through all of these various individuals. We're going to do it very quickly, and then we're going to focus on one aspect in particular. So hang in there, my friends. First, Alexander the Great. Did you know that he sent instructions back to the Greek city states that he was to be declared a god? So he styled himself Lord of the world, and he ordered his Greek followers to prostrate themselves before him, and he executed those who refused. Sounds kind of like what happened in the days of Nebuchadnezzar with Daniel, or with the three Hebrew young men that were told to bow down to the great statue. Are you going to be tested and tempted to bow down? Absolutely, friends. It may not be to a statue, but you're going to be tested and tempted to bow down. And when you do bow down, you're going to be making a choice. You're going to be making a choice to agree with a counterfeit to God himself. You remember a fellow by the name of Caesar Augustus? He was around when Jesus was born. He was the first emperor of Rome, and he sought absolute power ruthlessly, and then he sought to expand his empire so that he ruled the whole known world. In 12 BC, he became what was known as Pontifex Maximus, the head of the state religion and government. And when he died in AD 14, he was made a god on September 17th. He was made a god. Caligula, remember that guy? Nasty fella. He had pretensions to divinity, and he built temples and statues to himself. He ordered his own statue to be placed in the temple in Jerusalem so that the Jews could worship him, but he died before it was accomplished. Now, interestingly, he often wore women's clothing or dressed like a god. Or so he thought. And then another one of his colleagues there in Rome, Domitian, one of the worst persecutors of all time, he insisted on being addressed as master and god. And then there was a fella, not so much in Rome, but a fella by the name of Genghis Khan. You remember him from your world history classes, don't you? He was called the tyrant's tyrant. And he began his murderous career at the age of 12. And by the age of 33, he took the name Genghis Khan, which means universal ruler. In other words, he felt that he was god of the world and acted like it. The tyrant's tyrant. Then there was a Turkish Muslim. His name was Tamerlane. He took the motto of all true tyrants, and here's what it was. As there is but one God in heaven, there ought to be but one ruler on earth. So, in effect, he declared himself the one ruler on earth in place of God. Then there was a nasty fella. In the Middle Ages, his name was Tomas de Torquemada. Torquemada. He became the Grand Inquisitor of Spain for the Roman Catholic Church. Even though He was Jewish of heritage himself. He persuaded Ferdinand and Isabella to expel all Jews from Spain. And then in 1492, the very same year Columbus sailed to America, he persuaded Ferdinand and Isabella to issue what was called the Edict of Expulsion. That created the largest population of Jewish refugees from medieval Europe. And any that remained were burned alive. Yet many called him the savior of Spain. His vicious Inquisition continued its grim work even after his death. Believe it or not, it tortured and burnt victims in Spain for 200 years, and it burnt its last victim in the New World in 1836. That's coming up pretty close to time, 200 years away now. Then there was this super nasty fellow by the name of Vlad the Impaler. You've probably heard about him. From 1456 to 1462, the Count of Wallachia, south of Transylvania, butchered one-tenth of the population to preserve absolute power. Vlad's father was honored by the Holy Roman Empress Sigismund with membership of the Order of the Dragon, meaning that his son was the son of a dragon, or Dracula. Son of a dragon? Yeah, Vlad seized the theme and brooked not even the slightest opposition, and he proceeded to impale on thousands of wooden spikes all he found to be even remotely objectionable to his absolute rulership. And, shockingly, he converted from Orthodox Christianity to Catholicism. But his barbarity was so overwhelming in protecting and displaying his perverse power that he terrified even the Muslim Turks, who came across a field with stakes nearly 2 miles long and a half a mile wide, on which were impaled the bodies of men, women, and children, about 20,000 of them. Now, no wonder he's called Vlad the Impaler. But what's interesting is he became a traitor to the Christian cause. The abject horror of his dominion strikes terror into the heart of any civilized person, now over 650 years down the trajectory of history. And space here in our program today doesn't permit a more detailed account of his horrifying atrocities as a betrayer of Christ while claiming to be a Catholic. He had all kinds of people impaled sideways, Christians, Jews, heathens, so that they moved and twitched and whimpered in confusion a long time like frogs. He impaled people and roasted them and boiled their heads in a kettle and skinned people, hacking them to pieces like cabbage. And he roasted children and forced their mothers to eat them in the land that he ruled. Whoa! These are human beings that did this, friends. Even in the name of Christ. Then there was a fellow by the name of Caesar Borgia. He was the son of Pope Alexander VI, and he used the armies of the Roman Catholic Church in an attempt to establish his own principality in Italy. His manipulation of political power for his own ends was actually celebrated in the book, The Prince, by Machiavelli. Machiavelli actually praised him, and Caesar himself took the motto, either Caesar or nothing. In other words, he was the son of a pope. And then we move to not-so-jolly old England, Henry VIII. As king of England, he seemed to be the ideal king, young, fit, well-educated, handsome, but was a bloody tyrant. For attacking Martin Luther, the Pope conferred on him the title Defender of the Faith. Wow! Then he broke from the Roman Church and declared himself to be the supreme head of the Church of England. In other words, basically, I am God. We'll be back.
There is so much more about Chuck Chrismeyer and Save America Ministries.
on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, saveus.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, saveus.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at saveus.org.
Today we're talking about the nature of tyranny. Absolute tyranny. What does it look like? What does it look like in history? And what will it look like today, in the days ahead? Henry VIII, we know a lot about him. In fact, there was a movie, a wonderful movie, that was called A Man for All Seasons. It was a classic film of Henry's 6 serial wives, 2 who were beheaded, 1 hung, drawn, and quartered. He even killed his best friend, had him executed at the Tower of London, Sir Thomas More. I urge you, actually, to watch that film, A Man for All Seasons. It is well worth watching. And it was all in order to carry out his lust for an heir to the throne, and he was willing to divorce and remarry and divorce and remarry and divorce and remarry and divorce and remarry and kill those who divorced, whatever it took to make himself a quasi-god in England. But then there was Mary I. Remember her brutal persecution of Protestants earned her the name Bloody Mary. In her effort to revive the Roman Catholic Church in England, she ordered some 300 Protestants burnt at the stake. Now, there are many others. There was a woman by the name of Catherine de Medici. She came from a powerful family called the Medici family, which ruled in Italy with despotic powers. And in a horrific plot that stained the pages of history, she, believe it or not, in 1572, ordered the massacre of over 4,000 Protestant Huguenots in Paris. It became known as St. Bartholomew's Day Massacre. And, shockingly, Pope Gregory XIII struck a medal to celebrate the event. In other words, the papacy celebrated absolute tyranny. We'll have to get back to that, maybe, if time permits. And then there was a fellow by the name of Ivan the Terrible. Takes us to Russia. He was fond of hunting, enjoyed the thrill of the kill. But while seemingly religiously devout, he enjoyed beating up and robbing farmers. In fact, he even made a public confession of his sins in Moscow. At the age of 17, was crowned Tsar of Russia, and then he set about building an empire, and his tyrannical rule unleashed a reign of terror seldom matched in history. Thousands were tortured and killed. Even his closest advisors were imprisoned or exiled, and yet he donated money to the church to pray for the souls of his victims. Wow. And to enforce his rule, Ivan introduced the Oprichniki, much like the KGB or Hitler's Gestapo, to instill terrifying fear into the populace, even bursting into churches to abduct priests and murder them right before the altar. The Archbishop of Novigrad was sewn inside a bearskin and then hunted by a pack of hounds who tore him to pieces. That didn't happen in Rome, friends. That happened in Russia. He tortured and mutilated, impaled, roasted, and massacred 60,000 of its citizens. Men, women, and children were tied to slaves, which were pushed into the freezing waters of the Volkhov River. And there were so many corpses, they dammed the river and made it flood its banks. Hardly a family in Russia escaped his murderous rule unscathed. And the country took centuries to recover from that most tyrannical of rulers. Then there was Boris Godunov, was chief advisor to Ivan the Terrible. He was like Ivan's false prophet. Secret police to spread terror and tortured, imprisoned, executed, or exiled all who opposed him. And when his son succeeded him, Russia then plunged into a period of civil war known as the Time of Troubles. And even Peter the Great, 1721, had himself named Emperor of all Russias, seized control of the church as patriarch. The clergy were tortured to reveal the secrets of the confessional and were murdered if they refused. And, of course, we can't leave out France and Maximilien Robespierre. What he said France needed was a single will, and that was to be his. So a reign of terror followed, culminating in what was called the Great Terror, just like the Great Tribulation that we're told is going to happen. To Robespierre, organized religion was the enemy. So he sent agents across the country to de-Christianize the population. Notre Dame was deconsecrated and renamed the Temple of Reason. He ordered all vestiges of religion to be obliterated. He searched and houses, mass executions began. The guillotine became overworked. Entire families were guillotined. And he declared nature to be the supreme being. Saw himself as the missionary of virtue, with the guillotine being an instrument, as he said, of moral improvement. And it goes on and on and on. We go to Africa. In building his Zulu African empire, Shaka, it's estimated that Shaka killed over 2 million people, often in mass executions. In Paraguay, South America, Dr. José Gaspar Rodríguez de Francia, known as El Supremo, became perpetual dictator of Paraguay, instituted a reign of terror, imprisoning anyone who criticized him, set up a system of spying such that brother informed against brother, son against father, servant against master, husband against wife, and anyone caught in the streets had to prostrate themselves or risk being cut down by the saber. People believed he was immortal. And despite his contempt for religion, at his death, a priest delivered a glowing eulogy and exhorted Paraguay to weep for the savior of the country. Whoa! Hung Shu Chuan, China, while claiming membership and becoming leader of the Society of God, Hung proclaimed a new Chinese dynasty, the Heavenly Knights of Great Peace, with himself as Heavenly King. During the 14 years of the Taiping Rebellion, over 20 million are thought to have perished. We know about Vladimir Lenin, Joseph Stalin, there in Russia. Joseph Stalin, his doting mother groomed him for the Orthodox priesthood. In 1912, having joined the Bolshevik faction in rebellion against the Tsar, he took the name Stalin, which means man of steel. An estimated 25 million perished as a result of dictated collectivism, and millions more were executed through his so-called progressive reign of terror. Progressive? The spirit of Antichrist, friends, comes in the name of progressive. Does that sound familiar, what's going on in America today and throughout Europe? Mussolini, Benito Mussolini, was no better there in Italy. He sought to recreate the power of Italy in the days of the Roman Empire, executing all he imagined might betray him. And Adolf Hitler, while claiming Christianity for public consumption, gained favor among the German clergy and citizens. He became the most infamous tyrant of all time, ordering the death of over 6 million Jews, causing between 35 and 60 million others to die and completely destroying and dismembering his own country. So, we don't have time to go through the whole litany of all of these people that go on and on. In California, shockingly, a murderous dictator was an ordained minister of the authoritarian right-wing Gospel Outreach Evangelical Church based in California. In March of 1982, a junta headed by Montt, Efrain Rios Montt, seized power in Guatemala, wiping out at least 448 villages off the map. Hundreds of thousands fled to Mexico in just 4 months. People of all ages were not only shot, they were burned alive, hacked to death, disemboweled, drowned, and beheaded. Small kids were smashed against rocks or bayoneted to death. In 2012, friends, his term expired and he was charged with genocide and yet remains under house arrest without trial. That was just up to 2012. You see, Satan's still on the loose. Terrifying tyrants, absolute tyranny. And we're said that what we do not learn from history, we're doomed to repeat. So unspeakable tyranny has troubled our world since the earliest eras of history, beginning probably with Nimrod. In the West, particularly America, we've been largely sheltered, haven't we, from these kinds of dictatorial atrocities? But the darkening clouds right now, ominous winds of history are sweeping over us. You can feel the chill of it, friends. Just look at what's happening through our government and the use of the law lawlessly and tyrannically. Do you not think that the world's ultimate, consummate tyrant, known as the Antichrist, the imposter, is soon going to make his appearance, sweeping the world as we know it and its people into an unprecedented tyrannical rule under Satan's authority? It is going to happen. Jesus said it was going to happen. One of the principal characteristics of it is massive persecution. We're going to take a look at some of the characteristics of these tyrants. You're going to be shocked. Makes it difficult for us to understand, how did they become tyrants like this? I guess human nature is still wicked. We'll be right back.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, "I'll build my church." Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, "Behold how they love one another." Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
Welcome back to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Chrismeyer. You may wonder why we're having to go through this tale of terror, tribulation, absolute tyranny, treachery. But it's important for us to understand, as Jeremiah said, that the heart of man is desperately wicked. Who can know it? And if Jesus said that these things were going to happen again, except on steroids, In other words, what happened in these characteristics that we've just been talking about were actually more local, national organ. How about if it's international? How about if it's global? You see, what we're looking at is global tyranny. Even as we speak, the United Nations is working toward this treaty that supposedly is one of the most frightening things ever conceived to place upon the earth. To take away all national sovereignty, all in the name of protecting from pandemics. And it's happening right now in New York. The United Nations, as we speak, is in the process of trying to inaugurate this amazing treaty. Some have called it the most tyrannical thing ever to be conceived to put upon the planet. That's in our time, friends. To take complete and utter control, to place you, all America's laws, the laws of the rest of the world, all under the United Nations. To determine what you can do, you can't do, where you can go, where you cannot go, under whatever circumstances the General Secretary of the United Nations deems is appropriate or not appropriate. In other words, he becomes a virtual god. When we realize what's happening, it behooves us then to think very seriously about preparing our children, our grandchildren, pastors preparing your people. We can't play pretend anymore. You can't put your head in the sand. It's right there in front of us. That's why we have to go through some of this in order to see what has happened in history and then, by implication, what is likely to happen even far more severely when it becomes global. That's where the Antichrist comes in, or the counterfeit Christ. That's why I wrote the book, Antichrist. How to Identify the Coming Imposter. It's a $22 book. Yours for $18, I think it is, $18 or $20, right there on our website, saveus.org. Go to the website, saveus.org, get a copy there. Write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. If you're writing a check, add $5 for postage and handling. Call us, 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA. You're going to have your eyes open. This book is a thorough treatment of the various whys and wherefores and manifestations, not just from history, but from biblical prophecy. How to Identify the Coming Imposter. And we need to identify the spirit of that imposter. That's what we need to do. Now, listen to this. Many tyrants have been outwardly religious, even Christian backgrounds. Some trained for the priesthood, including Joseph Stalin, by the way. Many tyrants carried out their nefarious deeds by means of a trusted political or religious personality invested with vast power over the people, much like a false prophet. Isn't the Antichrist going to have his false prophet? You got it. Many tyrants came to power democratically before usurping ultimate power dictatorially. Most, if not all, tyrants saw themselves as the most important person on earth, thus invested either by God or circumstances as having absolute authority or claiming personal deity. In fact, virtually all tyrants justified massive atrocities to both gain and preserve absolute power through terrifying fear in pursuit of illusory peace and utopian glory. Isn't that what the New World Order is all about? Illusory peace and utopian glory? Virtually all tyrants were driven by an insatiable lust for dominion, either regionally or globally. Most of these tyrants were either sodomites, bisexual, or insatiably driven to almost unfathomable sexual promiscuity. While promising prosperity, the utopian policies of most of these tyrants led to massive poverty and devastating famine. They promised toleration, but it devolved for most into diabolical terror. Look what's happening in the name of tolerance today. The greatest intolerance we've ever seen in America. Faith and family were the inevitable casualties of godless utopianism, since faith and family provided security and stability inconsistent with the craven need of the tyrant to be the sole source of trust. So you see, the real issue is trust. Now perhaps you can understand why Jesus said in the book of Luke that men's hearts will fail them for fear of the things that are coming upon the earth. He also said, but he that endures to the end shall be saved. In other words, there's something that we need to endure, be prepared to endure. Are you ready for that? Are your children ready, your grandchildren? Why is it we're so unwilling to prepare for times like these? When Jesus talked about them, Paul talked about them, Peter talked about them, John talked about them, James talked about them. What is it? What is our reluctance? Maybe we think we're the exception to every rule. Even what Jesus said, even what the Father said, even what the apostles said. Are we? That's why I really think you should consider getting a copy of Antichrist, How to Identify the Coming Imposter. I really do. Go to the website, saveus.org. Call us, 1-800-SAVE-USA. Write to us at Save America Ministry. Add $5 for postage and handling. I can't remember whether the price there on the website is $18 or $20. In any event, you go to the website and find out. Okay, now we move from there, and we're going to take a very quick trip to the last 500 years and where it's going today. We'll call it absolute tyranny. And it takes hold under terrifying papal power, wielded under the title Pontifex Maximus, all in the purported name of Christ. Remember the Pope, Vicar of Christ, and so on? Merging the power of the state to enforce a debauched faith in order to procure and secure a global papal empire. That's what we're dealing with now. If we were to go back to about 1000 AD and move forward from there, we would find that things were so horrific within the Roman Catholic Church and among the popes. Here's a quote. Pope John the 12th, he was so thoroughly dissolute that there seemed to be no sin that he would not commit. He ran a brothel at the Church of St. John Lateran, where he put one of his own lovers in charge. He slept with his own mistress and his own mother. He took golden chalices from St. Peter's Church to reward his lovers after nights of passion. He blinded one cardinal, castrated another, causing his death. He used to call on pagan gods and goddesses to grant him luck with the throws of the dice in his notorious gambling sessions. Yet the perpetual moral debauchery among the many popes sitting as Pontifex Maximus was just the tip of the iceberg. Papal violence in unfettered pursuit of absolute power induced paralyzing terror throughout Europe, seducing thousands to betray loyalty, love, friendship, decency, and honesty, making desperate bids at self-defense while threatened with mass burnings at the stake. And the papal inquisitions didn't care about motives. Its inquisitors were trained to net all the victims who were betrayed to them. The inquisitions, over several hundred years, were classic harbingers of betrayals that will soon advance the coming beast empire as neighbors, friends, relatives, and even purported fellow believers will betray one another in displays of loyalty to the imposter's promise of global peace and prosperity through his infamous mark, just as Jesus foretold it would be. It is almost impossible for us in America today to comprehend the nature of the papal carnage, the absolute tyranny that was carried on in the name of Christ. Some have estimated, it has been estimated that the number killed by the papacy in the Middle Ages ranges from 50 million to 150 million souls. No power of imagination could adequately realize their sufferings. The Church of Rome shed more innocent blood than any other institution that has ever existed among mankind. It's breathtaking, friends. It's just breathtaking. Will history repeat itself? Absolutely. Absolutely, history will repeat itself. On May 4th, 2001, Pope John Paul II gave an address to the Archbishop of Athens and Primate of Greece, begging forgiveness for the Roman Catholic Church's involvement in the disastrous sack of the imperial city of Constantinople, which had been the bastion of Christianity. How, asked the Pope, can we fail to see here the mystery of iniquity in the human heart? It's more than the phrase mystery of iniquity. It occurs only once in the Bible, where it refers to the apostate Antichrist power. So the Pope, by seeking forgiveness for past Roman Catholic atrocities, seems merely to be admitting that the blood of millions is indeed on her hands, just as the Scriptures declared. Those who committed those heinous acts are and will be accountable to Christ himself, who will come to judge the world in righteousness, yet Rome's doctrines that produce church destruction have not changed. So, with the papal pleas for forgiveness and pardon, why then would the office of Inquisition be restored and renamed on June 29, 1908 by Pope Pius X to be known as the Sacred Congregation of the Holy Office? Change the name to cover the guilty. The infamous office of the Inquisition now gains the title Sacred Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith. Why then did Pope Francis on January 17, 2019, recognize, consolidate, and assign all related duties to the Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith? It would appear that the Congregation for Universal Inquisition, established in 1542, has been revived, resurrected, or reconstituted under a variety of other titles now. And time may well tell the tale. Antichrist, How to Identify the Coming Imposter. You might want to seriously consider getting a copy of the book. We'll call it $18 today. How's that? Right there on our website, saveus.org. Write to us at $5 for postage and handling. Become a partner, friends, and join the Persecution Project as well, because it's directly related to what we're talking about. Go to the website, sign up for the Persecution Project there, as so many are, and be prepared.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.